You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Monday, so it's time for Shapiro World with David Shapiro from Sasser & Securities. David, let's go back to Friday if we can. I did my 5 o'clock shadow show on Friday, and I was looking at the S&P, and at the time it was down around about 2.2%. And I thought, okay, well, what normally happens now is it rallies. And then, blow me, I looked at the thing, and it was down about 3.5% on the close, and I thought, this has got a feel about a nasty, nervous weekend and a bad Monday. And okay, it's not a good Monday, but it's not catastrophically bad, but still the market under real pressure. And I looked at Jerome Powell's speech and I thought, you change like the wind. I mean, the only good thing I can say about it is that he's got it wrong in the first place, i.e. inflation. Maybe he's getting it wrong again now and the markets will turn around. What do you make of it?
I think I agree with you, and I think it's a very important point. And you know what's given me the clues?
Yes.
Is that if you look at the bond market, there's hardly been a response. And the bond market is saying, listen, you're not going to go off that trajectory. You know, whatever you've told us, yes, you're going to keep, but you're not going off it. Therefore, we're already building in that by the second half of next year, rates will start coming down and so on. And inflation will peak. Or the market's going to be, you're going to have a recession that's going to bring rates down. But they weren't put off by what he said, or they weren't triggered or, you know, fueled into pushing rates a lot higher. So if you look at those rates, they hardly moved. We've been here before. I know the 2-year kicked up a little bit, but I mean, the equity market is a little more disturbed. And I think a lot of it is around the uncertainty that he's created. You know, he's gone from Jekyll to Hyde to Hyde to Jekyll. You know, no one knows what's coming out. And you know what? In that position, don't mess with the markets or don't even bother about the markets. Stick to your policy. What's your policy? Just give a policy speech. You know, don't take on the market. And I think coming back to what you said there, I think the big worry is, okay, you want to prove a point, therefore you're going to stick to it, and you might do a lot more damage than you need to do, rather than just see what unfolds. You know, you're going into an environment where inflation will come down. Yes, no one's saying it's going to come down to 2%, but it's coming down. It's starting to point the other way. And the other thing is that economic conditions are slowing. So I think we're all worried. You know, when I heard him, I just looked at it. I said, where does this man come from?
Yeah.
You wented him last year. You and Nick wented him in a big way because of transitory. And you laughed at him and ridiculed him and mimicked him. And you know, instead of doing something then or recognizing, he left it. And now he's gone the other way. And it just seems to me a shambles.
I really believe so. They've got so much. They've got such a big team and so much data at their fingertips that they've got it wrong. They've misanalyzed it. I mean, everyone's human, but on the other hand, to get it so wrong for so long, I find actually a little bit distasteful. David. Anyway, the market didn't like it at all.
And you know what? I'm not an economist, and therefore I don't keep models. I'm giving you a personal view, a person who listens to every speech and follows markets. You know, I've come out of there and say, okay, look, I'm not doing anything for a few months. I'm just sitting back. I know it's going to be tough, but to be honest, I think that he has erred, and I think the whole way he's projected this is quite worrying. Did you see Elizabeth Warren? I mean, she's a senator. She just let go.
No, I didn't see that. What did she say?
No, I mean, she just went at him for his whole attitude of knocking the economy. In other words, of bringing the economy, almost orchestrating it into a recession. And I think the big worry is that you can orchestrate it into a recession that's deeper than it should be. So, I think people are very concerned about what's coming out of the Fed. I've also got another view. I think that they're all politicians. Everybody there is vying for, You know, everybody's vying for a political position and all trying to make their name. Neil Kaskari, who you might remember from 07, 08, he was one of the principal characters there with Bernanke and Geithner and Hank Paulson. You know, in actually saving saving the U.S. economy. You know, and the way he said, it's an inferno. You know, this is a, for God's sake, man, you're a Fed governor. You don't use that language, you know. You're not on the pulpit, you know. You're not inferno, you know. You'll go to hell. Do you know what I mean? It's not. We're not there. You're a Fed governor. You're supposed to bring stability to an economy as well. Yes, we need higher interest rates. Yes, we need this. But you don't talk like that, you know. You always give some kind of hope. Anyway, I just looked here. I said, oh, this is all politics, you know, all vying for. For the top position.
I look at the way that Lesetha Kanyaga, the South African Reserve Bank governor, behaves himself. Mm. He keeps himself quiet. He's got a meeting every couple of months leads to an interest rate announcement and some commentary regarding that announcement, whether it be flat, up or down for interest rates. And he conducts himself in a civilized manner, in a restrained manner. But we were saying last week, both of us said, no, he's not going to say anything we don't already know, but he did say something we don't already know. And I thought, well, surely he should lead up to this gently rather than just...
No.
Anyway, it doesn't matter.
What he did is that we did know it. I think most people haven't changed their course. That's what the bond market said. And in fact, even the equity markets. Equity markets are shaken simply because they're saying, okay, you know... Yeah, there are people who are saying that we're going to pivot. It doesn't matter. It's got nothing to do with you, what the market says. Stick to your strategy. You know, stick to your strategy speech. This is what we're going to do. This is why we find it. Give some explanations. And this is what we're going to continue to do. But you don't, you know, he took a swipe at market saying, do you think I'm going to pivot? I'm going to show you. So, okay. I don't know. Anyway.
I really am not,
you know, I don't feel any stress at this point. We'll talk about it. I'm still quite calm. I think that, you know, I think a lot of the bad news has already been baked into the market. You know, we know that 6 months are going to be tough. We know that things are going to slow down. You know, we know so much of all of this and it's already in the market. So, honestly, Lindsay, I don't think we're going to hit those June lows again. I don't think we're going to see that.
No, I don't think so either. I think it'll be a double bottom. I really do, and I've always said that. It's the wrong time of year for a trend to be put in place. We rallied too much from being too low, probably. We're coming back again. A reality check during thin conditions, let's face it. But some interesting fundamentals coming through, Jackson Hole being a case in point. But I agree with you. I don't think we're going to go shooting up again, but I think the low has been put in place. Now, David,
on that shoot, it's not going to shoot up. You know what I mean?
No, definitely.
And you mustn't position yourself and you mustn't be disappointed. That's the whole thing. That's what I say. Just get into the trench and sit there and you know, we're going to have to just battle it out for a few in the trench for another couple of months and until things do improve. And if you get into that mindset, you won't be disappointed. But I don't think you position yourself for any big turnarounds. On the other hand, I don't think you position yourself for any major collapses.
I think that if you woke up this morning, if you just looked at your screen, you would probably say, oh, look at my portfolio. I've got Grindrod Shipping and Massmart in my portfolio. Look at this, David. Now, what does this tell you? Does it say that South African assets are undervalued? I mean, Grindrod Shipping, cautionary announcement, came out at 3:30 South African time, issues holding announcement. A company called TMI, which is already a shareholder, says it wants to buy the lot. So the share price is up 20%. And then before that, earlier on this morning, Walmart, suckers for punishment, obviously, Walmart saying they want the rest of Massmart. And I don't understand it. Maybe they say it's so cheap, the rand is so weak, and we've got to get it's 42.75% higher. Yeah. It's a monstrous move. Tell me about Massmart first of all. Good, bad?
Massmart, they have to do this. Mm. You know, I think it's very interesting to see that Massmart are going to make a bid for whatever shares they don't own. That's 62 Rand, so it's we can learn from that.
Yeah.
It's a healthy premium, and it's what it does do is it allows them to fix the company without the prying eyes of investors. Mm. And that's the only way they'll be able to fix it.
Are they going to delist it, do you think?
They delist it. No, there's no doubt about it. It will be delisted.
Not another one.
No, I know. That's number one. And then the same thing with Grindrod Shipping, which was unbundled from Grindrod.
Yes.
A very good operation. And they did exceptionally well. You know, they trade in ships or boats or whatever you call them. And they're in the right area at the moment, dry bulk. And I'm sure that whoever's making a bid for them sees
that. TMI.
Lindsay, I'm writing an article now. And as I talk to you, it's the conversation we had last week. You know, I think I've written all around the stock exchange because what's happening is, a lot of these smaller companies are not getting the kind of recognition they are from shareholders. They don't have them. And this is something, when I started to think about it, this is something that happened 30 years ago. You know,
when was 30 years ago? 1992, is that? Yeah.
Well, when change came here, we had political change.
Right.
We had also the huge development of technology. The whole stock exchange changed. And what brought us, what happened then is we had the kind of evolution of the whole industry. You know, we had so many new players coming. And I'm writing about Hendrik, who I helped, you know, in the early stages. We helped him with his administration when he was building up Investec Asset Management.
Hendrik de Toy, yeah.
Hendrik, yeah. And it's, I'm not taking a dig at him in any way. Quite the opposite. You know, it's a complimentary article. And just how his business came from nothing. He had 2 years he was given by Stephen and Bernard Cantor of Investec. He had to get this business right in 2 years because they were ruthless. They would have kicked him out. You know, I said, sorry. And he did it. Today, he's bigger than them.
Okay.
But what happened is that the evolution of that business took away from the, you know, more products came, more combinations of products. All of that took away from the JSE and focused on only the big companies. And a lot of our companies also saw greener pastures. So the whole complexion of the JSE changed. There was no room for small businesses. And this is the consequence.
What is the article? What's the focus of the article, David? Sorry, I'm missing
exactly
your point.
Exactly. What the stock exchange is doing now. Mm. Sorry. I should have told you in the first place.
That's right.
The focus is that the stock exchange are now trying to keep small businesses listed. And they're saying, oh, it's a matter of costs or it's a matter of regulation. It's not. Do you know what I mean? It's not that. The thing is that we don't have the shareholders as we used to have in our early days. People who used to like to build their own portfolios. You know, most people with money now go see a financial advisor who puts them into a range of different products, you know, an ETF here,
yeah,
a unit trust there, and so on. And those unit trusts and those ETFs have no desire to buy small businesses on the JSE. They focus around a very small universe of large companies. You know, they circle, that's it. And that's where the concentration is. The rest of the market doesn't matter. So and the analysts are gone. You know, the analysts are gone. No one covers these companies. Nor is there any kind of promotion for individual share ownership. So what we're seeing, Massmart is different. Massmart is saving the company. But with Grindrod Shipping, certainly, with so many other companies that we've seen vanish from the JSE, it's around that issue. Nobody cares about it.
So let's get this straight now. TMI, I'm just reading little snippets from this Hoppus 3 announcement on the Stock Exchange News Service is, in relation to the non-binding indicative proposal by TMI, that's Taylor Maritime Investment Limited, to acquire the entire issued and to be issued share capital of the company not already owned by TMI or a subsidiary or affiliate thereof. In other words, TMI, presumably an American company, I don't know, I never heard of it, but it presumably does own part of Grindrod Shipping. It wants the whole lot. Do you think then that the split between Grindrod, the two Grindrods, was engineered, you know, one lists in the United States of America, was to facilitate this move, and it's taken a couple of years
for
them to get it together. Do you think so?
Very possible. Yeah, we don't know who's behind it. It could be the family. It's easy. You know, these are private equity deals, and companies are companies are taking back, or individuals or families are taking back their companies. You know, a lot of them, or they're going into private equity businesses where they can continue to run, because they're getting no benefit from the JSE. Absolutely no benefit. The fact that they're up 20% today gives you an indication that if a private equity player is prepared to do that, then the market has mispriced it, you know, badly. They see value. And how many have we lost? We're going to lose. Did you see Distell's numbers? Superb numbers.
Great numbers. And there was a very very simple headline on a website, a very well-known website. It said, distilled results show South Africans have been buying more alcohol. And I'm sure, oh, really? It must have taken you a while to work out. But anyway, but David, do you think Grindrod Shipping, therefore, will then be absorbed into TMI or taken off whatever exchanges on there?
No doubt about it.
So that's gone as well. And
that will go as well.
And you think Massmart's going also? Surely not.
Yeah, well, this is two this week. Yeah, listen, look what else. I can't even remember the number of companies that we've lost over the last year. Joffy's company. Long for Life, gone. A number of them have been taken out. So, you know, we're just shrinking. And now we're going to get Massmart as well. So it's two today. What other bits? And you can see the value. Oh, we had Imperial, remember?
Yes.
Imperial Logistics, gone, and so on. It's not, this is not a swipe at Leila. I mean, Leila's come too late. Leila Faree, you know, the CEO
of the JSE Limited. Yes.
No, it's got nothing to do with her. No, it's really got to do with
South Africa.
That has been, you know, South Africa. Look, the other part. I've only got 500 words, so it's very hard to put everything into an article. The other thing is that South African economy is laboring. You know, it doesn't offer opportunity for listed vehicles, for new ones. We're still an old-fashioned mining business. We dig holes in the earth and extract something and sell them to some buyer in India or China or wherever, Europe, so on. So we're not a modern economy. We haven't got the tech issues, the tech apps and things like that attract people to NASDAQ or in other markets. You know, we've fallen behind in that. The other thing is that we don't open, you know, we don't roll out a red carpet for investment here and bring businesses here that can grow. And, you know, on the mining front, a lot more could have been done under that. So that's another element which I can't bring in unless I want to go and double the size of my article. And then it gets cumbersome, you know.
And this is whatever. A business day on Friday, is it?
Yeah. I'm trying to find units. I'm trying to. But, you know, when I think about it and I think about the successes of the people you talked to at 91, of Coronation, even of Magda, you know, the growth of those businesses, and a lot of them have taken away attention off the JSE. Yes, they use the JSE as you know, there's a foundation there, but they're also offering you so much more foreign products. You know, they're tracking foreign indices. There's a huge amount. They've got a lot more shareholders in their products than the JSE listed companies have, as shareholders. So, yeah, it's So, you know, what the stock exchange now is trying to reverse it. It's not going to happen. Here you are, you know, two more today.
It's disturbing, actually, because in order to go into financial services as a broker, what you've got to do now is choose a product. What happens is that you go to a presentation, and they give you the presentation, and then they take you to lunch, and there's a golf day or a mountain biking competition or something sponsored by a company, and you buy their product. You don't actually do any work. I mean, I'm not saying you don't do work. That's a stupid thing to say. But you don't look at today's list on the Stock Exchange News Service, and there's that property company MAS, Mass PLC, Advertex, Sea Harvest, Sun International, Steinhoff, Hulamin, and the aforementioned Mass Martin Grindrod have all come out with numbers. But do you think there's someone sitting down there and meticulously poring over these numbers like you do if the company interests you? Those days are gone, David.
Yeah. No one's going to do that. You know, I say it to you again. I say that I can't bring private clients into these businesses because they're too small.
Yes.
You know, I can't get the spread. But, and I underline that but, and a lot of this is behind the competitions that I run, is that if you're running your own portfolio, you know, if you haven't got the multi millions or so and so, and you're starting out, then there's so many good businesses that you can buy, and that's why you go through the results. But it's very, very hard to get the volumes that you want. So the other thing is, I said, if I ran a fund, yes, I'd love to run a private equity fund and just look at the Grindrod Shippings and say, I like this company. There's underlying value there. I'm going to keep buying it, you know, or various companies, whether it's a Novus, and I'm just throwing out some things, or the Caxtons, or the Impact, you know, that we've spoken about many, many times. You just go out and say, listen, okay, I'm going to buy 10 shares at a time, whatever it is, you know. Every day, 5,000, 10,000, and over time, you just build up your exposure. You know, I think you should talk to people like Keith McLachlan or Pete Falloon and these things.
Yeah.
You know, they're masters of it. And they've identified some really good areas where you can do well in small businesses in South Africa.
Look at Hulamin. I mean, he's a very well-known fund manager that earned, you know, bet his house on this thing, and it's done incredibly well. Because you know why, David? It's because he sat down and he did hours and hours and hours of assiduous research, and he said, right, this is for me. Went to his company and said, I'm buying this. Is that okay? And they said, yes, and away he went.
You remember a year ago when you made me do the, first of all, I did the, what is it called, the ventilator fund, and we had one before.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Remember, we spoke about it casually. If you knew the returns that were made on those stocks, which we identified then, I mean, it's absolutely staggering, you know, what was made at those kind of levels in those stocks. And in 2020, they were throwing away ArcelorMittal. They were just giving away Nampak. They were giving away Hulamin and so on. So I'm saying, you know, that was that, you know what I mean? That was an opportunity in which people could have made double, treble their money. It was staggering. But what I'm trying to say is that it doesn't stop. Yes, that was a special time, but you're still seeing some businesses there that are very, very attractive. Lindsay, the danger is this is not the end. It's going to continue. More and more of our businesses of high quality will find, you know, will vanish.
Yeah, and do you know what? The JSE will be a very quaint old relic with a few companies on it, and people will still buy and sell. But the dual listings, the thing that worries me is the dual listing situation might disappear as well. And they'll say, it's just too much money to be on the JSE.
Yeah.
Do we need to be on the JSE?
Yeah.
Do we really want to? We'd rather be in London or in Sydney or wherever it is and stay there. I'm not talking about the next year or 5 years, but by the time you hang up your whatever you hang up,
you can't say boots.
No, I wasn't going to say boots. By the time you throw in the towel, let's put it that way. Let's use a boxing term now. I just don't see people being attracted to financial services unless they're, you know, they're salespeople and want to have a fund of funds.
Yeah.
All right, David. So anyway, I mentioned some other companies: Advertex, eHarvest, Sun International, Steinhoff, Fulamin, Mass, whatever that company is, the property company. Anything? No.
I'm going to go through them now in greater detail. I was occupied this morning just with various meetings, but I want to go through them. Like to look at the Sun International because it does give you an idea of the turnaround. Look, they went through a horrid time.
Yes.
I'm not interested in Sinoff. I just think it's a company that's going to battle along. And also I'd rather look at Pepco. What else is there? But I'll still go through them. I haven't seen the market's been hurt badly by what happened on Wall Street on Friday. So we're under quite a bit of pressure.
Yes, but it's halved its losses, and because the top 40 was 2.25% weaker at one stage, it's now only 1.1% weaker with 20 minutes to the auction. So it hasn't done that badly, and of course, inevitably, the S&P with no London participation and at this time of year has bounced back. It was down over 1%, now only down around about 0.5%.
But it's
still got a nasty feel about it.
Yeah, no, it's not. It's going to take time. I come back and, once more I start. The number of bears, I was just looking at another chart today. It came from another source from the one that I quoted last time. The number of puts or negative, against the calls and that. I mean, it's quite astronomical. The level of bearishness equals the level that we saw back in 2020 in the depths of COVID. Now, that's always a sign. Those who want to be out are out. And I always take that as a positive. You want to be, no one's going to come out and say, oh, I've got to get out because they've already sold. So the market is extremely short, which is always kind of a sign of a bottom and that. So whoever wants to sell is sell, has sold. They're out. So I always see that as positive. And also think the other thing is that, markets are smart. They're well ahead. We know there's going to be 6 months of hardship. We know that there's going to be a slowdown in economic conditions. We know that earnings are going to come out of pressure. It's not a surprise. So I think a lot of what's being spoken about is already in the market. PEs have come down quite a bit. The multiples have come down. So I think all I'm trying to say is a lot of the bad news has already been discounted. That doesn't mean that it's going to turn around and fly. No. You need good news for that, and it might take some time for the good news to come through.
Yeah, I think everyone must calm down a little bit. David, let's move on now to weightier matters. Fantastic cricket series between England and South Africa, one all nicely poised for the Oval Test, which is the week after next, which is fantastic. And football, you're top of the league. It's Arsenal and Man City. They're playing well.
I could have killed Gabriel. Messing around in your. I don't know what gets into their heads. I don't know. You don't do it with someone like Mitrovic hanging around. And anyway, but they came back. They really did. They played well. If you looked at the game, they're moving the ball well. They've got a nice spirit, and they're one of the better teams around. Look, they've got to be tested against Man City and Liverpool and so on. But for once, you feel that they can actually hold their own. And then it's not going to be like a 6-0, but you never know with Arsenal.
But there is a feeling about them now. There's been this rebuilding process and this cultural change under Mikel Arteta, who we mustn't forget was the assistant to Pep Guardiola at City. So he was a greenhorn. He didn't have experience of being the manager. He was always the assistant manager or coach. But now I think he's coming into his own. And Gabriel Jesus, although he didn't play very well on Saturday, crikey, what a signing. We said that last week.
Yeah.
The other thing is, I have to say, I was reading an article in The Telegraph this morning, and it suggested that Premier League managers are communicating with each other, and this is a very well-respected football journalist, said they're communicating with each other on how to combat Erling Haaland, because they say he's an alien. He's taller, he's bigger, he's faster.
I was just going to bring it up.
Than they've ever seen. They were 2-0 down, and even when they were 2-0 down against Crystal Palace at home, I thought, I'm not bothered. I know that City... I love Pep's. I don't love City. I love Pep Guardiola. I knew that they were going to come back and win. I thought it would be 3-2. Yeah. But he just rampaged. He said, OK, I'm going to score three goals, and he did. Yeah. He scored 6 in 4 games now, for goodness sake. He's a phenomenon.
You know what? He's there in the right spot at the right time.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's what I mean? Instinctive.
You don't take that for... It is instinctive. I think that's... And that's where you get great strikers who are there when they need to be there, you know, and they know where they're. Harry Kane's like that.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I don't like him because he's got that look. I don't know.
What look?
Maybe it's because I've spurred, I don't know, kind of that open mouth look, you know, like, oh. But anyway, I just.
It's very shallow of him.
I know. But I mean, he's there. And he's there with his head. He's there at the right, you know, right place and whatever. And you can't take that away. You know, when he's got the ball, you know it's going to find the back of the net. And but this Haaland is something else.
I've seen lots of centre forwards. I've seen Shearer and I've seen Lineker and a true number nines. You know, and who are the other ones? I'm thinking of, I can't think of any at the moment, but proper old school number nines, centre forwards, as we used to call them. I've never seen anything like. I mean, Lukaku was a beast, but he didn't have the skill. Haaland, I can't believe what I see when I see him. I think if I was a defender, I'd sit down and cry if he got near me, because he's going to run over you.
It's fast. But he's fast and he controls and he just takes that gap. You know, just brilliant. But he is a bit of a steamroller. But it's wonderful to see players like that.
It really is.
It's just wonderful. I enjoy it. I just enjoy it because he brings, you know, it just brings that skill to a game that someone like that can change it so fast.
Anyway,
good for him.
This week, David, we've got a rare thing, which is a Tuesday and Wednesday Premier League full program. And there's going to be midweek match of the day on Wednesday night. So there's a full program of games. And hopefully Arsenal can maintain this 100% record and give City a run for their money. It won't last, of course, but not with Haaland playing for them. As long as he stays fit, unfortunately City have won the league. Anyway, and Manchester United have spent $84 million on a 22-year-old from Ajax. Yeah, I mean, Erik ten Hag comes from Ajax and he takes all the players and brings them to Manchester United for absurd amounts of money. He scored 12 goals last season and they've paid $84 million for him. I mean, what?
Okay,
I don't know what his name is. Anthony.
I think they're a bit different.
Anthony, that's it. That's his name. Is Anthony. Yeah. Anyway, David, thank you very much for your time.
Okay.
We'll speak tomorrow evening
thank
on
you.
The 5 o'clock show. Okay. David Shapiro is from Sasson Securities, and that was Shapiro World. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.